Welcome back to the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast. I am Susan Ebergall, and today I am welcoming Joelle Cavagnaro onto my podcast. You probably know her as Joelle Samantha on Instagram. She is founder and head coach of Level 10 Coaching, and Joelle and I have become Instagram buddies over the course of time. We have so much in common, including our background in education, which we talk quite a bit about in this episode. But Joelle and I are going to start hammering home myths and facts surrounding things like PCOS. And is it possible for you to lose fat with PCOS? And what is actually happening with that diagnosis? We talk about metabolic adaptation, insulin resistance, hormones, the whole nine yards. So go grab your coffee, put up your feet, take a listen, or put on your AirPods and go out for a walk and take a listen. I think you're going to really love this episode. Hey, Joelle, good to see you.
So good to see you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. We have become kind of, I call them Instagram friends, right?
Absolutely.
We found each other on Instagram. And I wanted to get you on here. Wanted to do this for a while because what you post resonates with me so much. And I know resonates with a lot of people that follow me. So we have a lot of the same followers too. So I wanted to get on here and talk about a lot of cool things. But first, if you could just tell everybody a little bit about you, kind of your background, and let's just start from that.
Sure. So I'm Joelle, for anyone that doesn't know. You can find me on Instagram at Joelle Samantha. So basically, a little background without boring everybody to death. I've been in the coaching space for about 7 or 8 years now. My background is in education. I actually went to school for health education and physical education. I dual majored, also minor in special ed, but I typically don't talk about a lot about that. And so my background is in education. I always wanted to be a teacher. My dad was a social worker in an elementary school, and I always kind of grew up seeing him in the school setting and like getting to, you know, teach kids and help kids and have summers off. And so I always kind of wanted to go into teaching, and I actually watched my dad be a competitive bodybuilder when I was growing up.
Oh, wow.
So like health and fitness and dieting was like not anything new in my house. You know, like I'd see my dad have his like cheat days and he'd have his peanut butter cookies. Like that was like part of my childhood. So, you know, I was the kid that was like dropped off in the gym daycare when my parents would go to the gym. So health and fitness was always, I think, a part of my growing up. And that's probably why I ended up wanting to teach health and fitness and nutrition. And so I went into school for health and PE. I finished my 4 years and I was like, man, I feel like I still have so much to learn. So I applied for a graduate assistantship in an exercise physiology master's program. And they take 5 GAs, grad assistants from around the country. I got chosen as one of these GAs. And so basically I got to do an accelerated master's in exercise science by working as a full-time grad assistant within the grad program. So that required us to like, we ran a cardiac rehab program for elderly adults. We ran a teen obesity program. And then we of course ran like all the undergrad labs and used all of them as subjects and whatnot. So it was kind of like 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. you worked, and then 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. you had your actual master's grad classes.
Wow.
So that was a hellish program, just because it was super, I mean, it was intense. Normally that program would have been like a 2 or 3 year long program for someone that wasn't a grad assistant, but as GAs, since we were like fully immersed, we had it in an accelerated 13 months. So it was like a jam-packed master's. But the awesome thing about that was that one, I didn't have to pay for tuition because I was working for the school as the GA. And two, I was done with 3 degrees in 5 years. So Yeah. So that was really cool, really awesome, really stressful, but I'm glad it's over. And I'm super glad that I did it, of course. So when I finished that program, I actually got a teaching job right out of that master's program. And it was kind of interesting because all of the other exercise science students in the program were not like teacher undergrads. They were, you know, people trying to go into physical therapy or people trying to go into cardiac rehab or be an exercise physiologist at a hospital. And I still went in like, nope, I'm going to be a teacher after this. And I'm just going to be a smarter teacher after this. So I got a teaching job right out of that program, teaching in New York City public schools.
Oh, wow.
And yep. And so I taught there for 4 years. It was, awesome and stressful and everything you can imagine, in a inner city school. But I really had an awesome time. I love being a teacher. I love my students. And while, I guess some backtrack here, while I was still in school, while I was doing my master's and while I was teaching, I ran my health and fitness coaching company on the side.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. So I guess I missed that part. That's kind of a big, that's kind of a big nugget in there that I sort of,
I was going to ask you about it eventually. So.
kind of skipped over that part, but at some point I was working with a coach, and that coach really helped me. I came from kind of a disordered background in terms of food, kind of struggled with orthorexia in the beginning of my fitness journey, really that obsession with, you know, clean eating, quote unquote, and over-exercising. And I was, you know, scared of carbs and scared of fats. And all I wanted to eat was protein because I thought that couldn't make me gain weight, you know, just so much misinformation. And I started working with a coach, that found me actually through Instagram and just for some reason saw something in me and was like, I want to help you. Like, I can tell you're in a funky place and like, I want to teach you. And he coached me for free. And said like, I will coach you for free if you basically represent my company. And so this was like 2012, like, fit, like influencers were not a thing. Like it was just like this sponsorship that I thought I was like so lucky to have, you know. At the time I probably had a few thousand followers on Instagram just from like posting my workouts and posting ab pictures and whatever else. And also Instagram was a lot different 7-8 years ago than it is now. And so eventually I coached under him and then he asked me to be a coach for the company, a year or two later. And I did that briefly, temporarily, until I saw how things were actually being done and being run on the back end of things. And I was not a fan. I did not like how things were being done. I started to discover that things weren't really being done in the best interest of the client. There was a lot of 1,000 calorie diets and 1,200 calorie diets. And I had just come so far in my educational journey to know that that was not okay and that was not healthy. And so it was a situation that was approached and not resolved. And so I left and I started Joelle Samantha Fitness Inc. to be my own my own coaching company. And so that is what I then ran on the side of finishing up school, the side of teaching. That was always like what I called my quote unquote side hustle, of, you know, I loved coaching people and, you know, helping whoever I could that reached out to me on Instagram. And I was also, you know, a full-time teacher. So that's kind of the background.
A very similar path. I mean, for me, from the perspective of education and then, doing the training thing as my side gig.
Yeah.
I mean, fast forward though, about 25, 30 years, probably that's where I would be. cause I did 33 years.
I was going to say you made it in education a lot longer than I did before I left. I got 4 years in.
And I think one thing for me that helped me with longevity in education, first of all, the system that I was in, Fairfax County Public Schools here is one of the biggest in the nation. It's really well supported. And it's a great system to be in. So I was very fortunate with that. But I was a teacher first. I mean, I taught music. My undergrad's in music education. So I was a band director and teacher and all that. And then I got my master's in counseling. So most of my years in counseling. So it was kind of, you know, it was a little different. You know, I didn't just do the same thing.
Sure.
But 33 years of anything, to be quite honest, is a long time.
Gets a little redundant now after a while.
A little bit much.
That's a really long time.
Props what grade level were you at?
High school.
Oh, okay. Wow.
High school, which is actually a lot of fun. And I was so happy to be in high school. It's a little scary when you're fresh out of college and you're like 22 and these kids are like 3 years younger than you, 4 years younger than you. And you're like,
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting you say that because same thing with me. I got hired right after graduation from college. And so I had just turned 22. Right. And so my seniors, my first class as a band director were 18. Yeah. And two of them I'm very good friends with to this day. I mean,
that's
my God,
so
they're in their
awesome.
They're 56 freaking years old right now. You know, it's mind blowing.
You're like, you were my student. Yeah. There's definitely still a few students that I keep in touch with. And it's funny. I think when I started at the high school, when I started teaching there, I thought I would like hate this seniors because I was like, they're gonna be too cool for school, but like I'll probably love my freshmen. Like they're young, they're moldable.
Yeah.
It was the exact opposite.
Oh wow.
I actually hated my freshmen. They were too cool for school because they just came from middle school and eighth grade and they think they're so tough and they think they're cool now that they're in high school. And I taught health. So you know, you're talking about sex and drugs and you know, STDs and things like that. And so they're like still that giggly, like a little bit immature bunch, which can be fun, but also can be annoying.
Yes.
Whereas the seniors were very like, they're teaching me things about sex and drugs that I don't know.
Yeah.
The seniors ended up being a lot of fun and they're just like, you can talk to them. They're more mature.
Yeah.
So I ended up like loving my seniors at like my upperclassmen more. Sorry guys, if you're listening, than my lower classmen, just because they were easier to talk to and they actually looked to me, I felt like as a mentor or like someone that could play some sort of leadership role in their life. And like I said, I just thought it would be the opposite. Like I thought the freshmen would look to that more and it really was the seniors that looked to that more.
Do you find that your education background has helped you in your coaching, you know, with your business and everything?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that not only am I extremely unbothered by a public speaking, you know, scope of things, but I think you also just learn how to read people. You know, as a teacher, you know how to read your students. Mm-hmm. You know who's struggling. You know who's too tired. You start to figure out whose needs are being met and whose aren't. You learn how to communicate differently. And you also learn how to teach differently, right?
Yeah.
Some people are visual learners. Some people are auditory learners.
Yep.
And you learn a lot of patience as well. Which all of these things, right? Communication skills, patience, like we need these things as a coach. And I also think above all else, and this is something that I get complimented on pretty frequently. And I didn't, I guess, realize that I do this, but now I do think it's a strength that came from teaching is that, you know, even on Instagram, what I try to do is take a complex topic and break it down into a really easily digestible way. And I started like over the years getting comments about like, yep, you're definitely a teacher. Like you made this super easy to understand. And I just, it's just how I've always done things. And I guess I didn't realize that that was maybe a skill that I learned from teaching that now I use, you know, in Instagram content and also of course in my coaching practices.
Yeah, guaranteed. I mean, I get that same compliment all the time. I can tell you're a teacher and I'm like, that's the best thing you could tell me because I mean, it is something that we've learned. We had to differentiate for everybody, right? Yeah. They put all kinds of learning levels in one class and you've got to be able to teach them all. You know, I mean, that happens with us musician people all the time. You got a flute, you got a clarinet, you got a trumpet, you got a saxophone. I mean, that's how it is every day. And so, teaching people, super important as a coach and being able to listen and communicate, you know, just the cornerstone. So I think education, coming from an education background has been unbelievably helpful in this industry, I think, for sure.
And I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, you probably retired after your 33 years.
Yes,
officially.
I did.
I joke that I retired, but like, obviously I didn't get in 30 years in the system. But I think that, you know, whether you're 4 years in, 30 years in, however long, not only are you learning so much, but I never imagined, and this is why I said, I don't know about you, because you actually retired. I never thought I would leave teaching. I never in a million years, that was never my plan to like leave teaching and take my business full time. It just kind of happened that way. Yeah. My business started to grow on the side of my teaching. And as much as I loved being a teacher and serving my students, I also kind of got to a point where there were a lot of people trying to work with me, and I had such a small amount of time because we know as a teacher, lesson planning, grading, like it's a very time intensive job outside of when the bell rings. And so I would only take on a certain amount of clients during the school year. And I got to like March of my last school year. And I had 150 people on a wait list. And I was like,
wow,
this feels so dumb. It's like, I feel like I could be helping so many more people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, of course I was helping people in a school system. I had, you know, hundreds of kids every semester that I was helping.
Right.
But you also start to feel like, wow, there's people on this wait list that are like begging for my help and begging to pay me. And then you have like the students who like half of them are sleeping in class, half of them don't want to show up to class, half of them are cutting class. And you're like, where am I more valued?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm sure that there were times, and mind you were in a great school system, so maybe not, but the New York City school system is crazy, because it's not one town. It's every single school is the entire district.
Oh, wow.
So like, I think you said Fairfax is where you are, right? So everyone that lives in Fairfax goes to that school.
Yeah.
So in New York City, the entire New York City school is one DOE. So Brooklyn, Manhattan, Bronx, Queens, Staten Island, it's all one school district.
Oh, wow.
So it makes things just really unorganized, really crazy. And I'm sure, you know, there were moments, maybe days, maybe years throughout your career where you just didn't feel valued. And that's just really how I started to feel, was like, I started to not feel valued. And, as a teacher, as an employee of that school, you know, I know that I had students that loved health class and loved having me as a teacher. But as a whole, I just felt taken advantage of, and not valued. And then I had, you know, I'd come home, you know, I'd be using my prep periods and my lunch periods to work on client stuff because that's what was lighting me up more.
Sure.
And so about March of 2019, March of 2019, I decided, I forget that this is only last year. It's wild. I decided that I was going to finish out that school year and I was going to try and do things on my own and take Joelle Samantha Fitness into, you know, a broader spectrum. And so I did that. I left, teaching. Obviously there were lots of conversations with my husband about this. Luckily he's a financial advisor. So like the money side of things, he was like, okay, this is what you need to make. Yep, this is what you need to make up in your benefits and your pension and your this, this, and that, and your salary. Yep. And we kind of like had this break even number and he was sort of like, you know, do you think you can make X in your business? And I was like, yeah, I think I can. And so I resigned that summer, you know, gave notice at my school. I had to give 30 days notice. So that's what I did. And after that, of course, I, you know, announced it to Instagram, told everyone I'd be taking more clients, wouldn't be teaching anymore. And within another month, I was at max capacity again.
Wow.
That's dang it. It's awesome. It is absolutely awesome. But I was like, what now? Like I left teaching so that I could take on more people, but like I'm at max capacity again because we do all one-on-one coaching. So that's obviously, you know, extremely time consuming.
Sure.
It's everything is one-on-one. There's no passive offers as of right now. And so everything is, because it's personalized and customized, it takes up a lot of my time. So you kind of get to a point where you're tapped out, like you're capped on time. So kind of was faced with two options at that point of like, do I start creating passive offers that like I can help people, but I'm not needed in terms of time after I create whatever this offer is, or do I start building out a team? And building a team scared the hell out of me. So I was like, I'll write an ebook. So the first thing I actually did was wrote an ebook. And I launched that a few months later and it did really, really well. And I was like, whoa, that went way better than I thought. Like I didn't know that was going to be so in demand. And so that was great, but it also still didn't solve my problem of all the people on my wait list that were still trying to work with me. So that began my journey of looking to hire an assistant coach, and also rebrand into something other than Joelle Samantha Fitness. Cause I felt like if I was going to grow a team, I didn't want it to still feel like a one man show. And I felt like with having the whole company under my name, mind you, lots of companies are people's names and they're successful companies, but I just felt weird about hiring this team of people that are like working for Joelle Samantha. I just wanted them to feel like they were a part of something bigger. So we rebranded into Level 10. 10 is an acronym, T-E-N, for training, education, and nutrition.
Love it.
So our thing was kind of like, you know, when you work with Level 10, we're going to level up your training, education, and nutrition, and that's going to level up your life. And that was kind of the, you know, sort of the core principles that we had in creating Level 10. And so I started to hire a coach, brought on a strength and conditioning coach to write up programming for me. That was like the first thing I wanted to delegate, which is really funny because as an exercise science major, you'd think I'd like love writing workout programming. I hate writing workout
programming. Not my favorite
it's
either.
Really tedious to me.
Yeah.
And so, exactly. So I hired him first and then I needed another nutrition coach. So I hired my first nutrition coach. And this was April of 2020 now. So about, you know, a year after I made the official decision. So I hired my first coach and within a month her roster was full.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, I guess I like either we start waitlisting people again or I gotta hire another coach. So I put something out on Instagram.
I remember that. Like,
okay, I'm looking for coaches. This is what I'm looking for. We probably got like 100 applicants.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. I was really surprised, you know, pleasantly surprised. And then, you know, so I went through all of those. I emailed back and forth with probably 50 of those people, then narrowed it down to 20 people, then scheduled Zoom interviews or FaceTime interviews with 10 of those people. Mm-hmm. And at the end of those 10 like interviews, I loved three of them. And I was like, what do I do now? And so my husband and I had a bunch of conversations about it. And I was like, well, I like started to convince myself, well, like if Alex, my first assistant coach, I'm like, if Alex's roster was full in a month, then if I only take one coach and their roster is full in a month too, like I'm going to be doing this whole song and dance next month anyway. So I took all three of them.
There you go. There you go.
So we quickly went from, you know, two coaches to five coaches.
Wow.
And that was big. And mind you, so like we launched Level 10 in April. This was now in May. We just went from like one man show in March to five man show in May. So that has been going really well. And so we've had this team that we've been building out. And after about 3 months, they were all starting to get relatively full where I was like, okay, probably got to start scoping it out again. And I kind of got to a point where I was like, I want to be like scoping it out. Like, I don't want people to just apply. Like, I want to also be like, hey, that person would be a good fit. Mm-hmm. So there were a few people that I was scoping out. And one of them last month, maybe July, we're in September. So maybe beginning of August, she reached out and was like, hey, I'm a friend of one of my other assistant coaches and I just love what you guys do. I, you know, talked to one of your other coaches about the transition over and they have nothing but great things to say. And if you ever need another coach, like it would be my honor to, you know, work for your team. And she was one of the people that I was like secretly scoping out. And I was like, yes.
The world's coming together.
Yep, everything just started to align, which felt really nice because Lord knows everything in 2020 has not felt aligned at all.
Correct.
So on the business side of things in 2020, at least that was really good. So I ended up hiring her. We trained her last month. She started taking clients this month. And now we have seven coaches. I recently just hired a virtual assistant because I am wearing too many hats. And we also, in I want to say July, brought on mental health services. So I think
I saw that. Yeah, I love
counselor.
That.
Yeah. So, excuse me. So my dad is a therapist, worked as a social worker, owns his own private practice, marriage counseling, you know, couples counseling, single counseling, everything. And so I've always valued therapy, mental health services, especially coming from an eating disorder background. And there was a girl that actually applied to work with us as a coach, and she ended up reaching out to me after our consult call and said, look, I really want to be a client with Level 10, but I also think I have something to offer to you and your team, and I would love to help. She said, I'm a mental health counselor. My specialty is actually in addictions, but health and fitness is a huge passion of mine, and mental health is a huge passion of mine, and I would love to take part in your team somehow in providing mental health education. And this was something my dad and I were talking about for years of like, how can we bring mental health services to our clients? And so we had been trying to integrate this for a while. And Kirsten, our mental health counselor, she just like came in and was like, I want to start doing Zoom calls with your team. I want to start educating them on like mental health and emotional health barriers that present themselves in our fitness journeys, like binge eating or emotional eating or tying our self-worth to the scale or bad body image days. And, you know, as a coach, these are things that we handle with clients on a daily basis, but there's only so many pep talks you can give before you realize like, I'm not a mental health counselor. And I can give you the tools and resources that worked for me, but I don't know of all the other ones out there because I'm not trained in this. So we brought her on as a mental health counselor. And then we officially also brought on my dad as the team's licensed psychotherapist. So now they get a mental health handbook when they start. They get a mental health Zoom call every month. They get mental health emails in their inbox for our clients. And now they have access to discounted one-on-one telehealth therapy with my dad as the licensed psychotherapist. So it has been a whirlwind. I think you're mostly caught up now. I've just been a tad busy. So this all officially launched in April. It is now September, to give y'all a timeline. And we are now a team of 10. And it is just wild.
That sounds amazing. And I will link your info in the show notes for this too.
Yeah, so thanks.
Can find you. Absolutely. You know, one thing that I've seen you talk about a lot and would be interesting to talk about here, because I hear about it a lot as well, is just kind of more like myths and realities with regards to things such as hormones, like what really happens and what we're thinking is happening that may not or may be happening. Metabolic adaptation, things like that. I know you post about that a lot too. Mm-hmm. And one of your fairly recent posts just kind of really resonated with me because like you said, you lay things out so well for people to understand. I love your swipe.
Thank you.
I love that format because it's easy. I mean, it's just little bits to digest, right?
To consume.
And it's not using big words. It's just like, this is what it means, you know? Right. And it would be kind of cool to go over that here a little bit because I get contacted by people who swear that it's, you know, middle age, it's menopause, it's perimenopause. Mm-hmm. It's all, you know, it's that great time of life that, you know, I've been through and continue to pay the price of at times, you know, I mean, it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Mother nature, ladies and gentlemen.
Right. But coming from someone, me, who would blame my metabolism for my lack of progress for such a long time, I feel like it's really worth a discussion. So let's start with hormones and exactly what do you see with people when they come to you guys regarding hormones? What are they talking about? What are hormones and how do they affect us?
Yeah, sure. So one thing I also wanted to just mention there, Susan, you know, you said you've come from this transitional phase, right, of using all the excuses and now being on the other side and realizing like, wow, those were excuses and really I just needed to do X, Y, and Z. Uh-huh. And I think part of that is a psychological barrier because we love fixed mindsets instead of growth mindsets. And I think that when we have a fixed mindset, we are so consumed by thinking we can't make progress because X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. When you are talking about such a teeny tiny part of the population that is actually struggling to lose weight because of a medical issue, and your issue is probably not that. And I don't want to discount or discredit anyone who does have any of those issues, because I myself have had hormone issues and have had trouble losing weight. And that was something that I had to grasp and learn about, because I was extremely misinformed, or I guess really uninformed before I was misinformed. And so, you know, it's not to say that those things don't exist. There are absolutely mm-hmm. thyroid issues, hormone issues that exist that make things harder for people. I'm not denying that at all.
100%.
But there's a lot of people that that are just uninformed, and they might use that as an excuse, either because they were led to believe that they can't make progress because someone else told them that, or just because they haven't found something yet that works for them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we hear people say all the time, like, do what works best for you. Don't copy me. Do what works best for you. But people are like, I don't know what works best right. for me. If I knew what works best for me,
I would do it.
Right. Exactly. So from kind of a hormone standpoint, my own kind of journey that I struggled with was PCOS. And I knew nothing about it until I got diagnosed. And it was really hard when I got diagnosed, because I really wasn't given a lot of information. And we kind of trust that our doctors are going to give us as much information as possible. And I really just super disappointed. I wasn't given a lot of information. You know, I had gotten this diagnosis, and I said, okay, like, what now? What do I do? How do I fix this? And the response was to go on medication and to go back on birth control. And I had just come off birth control after 10 years. And I was trying to get my cycle back. And so I wasn't getting a cycle, which is what caused me to go to the doctor and say, hey, something's wrong here. I'm gaining weight uncontrollably. Like, as someone who tracks macros and knows what they're consuming daily and is not eating in a surplus, and my macros haven't changed, and I'm gaining, like, I knew something was wrong. But that alone, I think, is a really important aspect. You say to someone, oh, I'm gaining weight uncontrollably. I don't know what's going on. And you're like, well, how much are you eating? Well, I don't know. Yeah. Or are you tracking macros? No.
Or so you hear, you know? I'm eating about 1600, the about word.
or I'm eating so healthy, I don't know why I'm gaining weight. Well, healthy foods have calories too. We can overeat on healthy foods.
All the time.
So I think for me, I was maybe in a different position than some people in terms of a hormone issue. I knew something was going on beneath the surface, either my blood sugar or my hormones or my thyroid, because I knew for what I was eating, having been a macro tracker for years, I knew that I should not have been gaining weight. And when I tried to enter into a deficit, I was just getting more inflamed. I was holding more water. My body was just like not having it. Yeah. So I guess expected to go to the doctor and get all this information about like what was wrong with me, why my body was doing this. And I was just, you know, hey, you can go on metformin, which is a diabetes medication, blood sugar medication, and birth control. And I was like, but that's the appropriate treatment technically, but it didn't teach me anything about like, well, why was my testosterone high? Why was my blood sugar high? Why was my estrogen and progesterone so low? And so I kind of had to do my own research and start my own journey on hormones and thyroid and testosterone and PCOS, because I really wasn't taught it, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, especially on Instagram, where we are consuming so much information, and it is really hard to navigate what is good information or not good information when we judge information based on like, oh, that person has, you know, 50,000 followers, so they must know what they're talking about, when we see plenty of idiots with 50,000 followers. So, you know, I think it's hard. You know, we have people talking about gut health, and we have people talking about hormones. And sometimes I think these accounts convince people that there's something wrong with them. And if they haven't lost weight, like, it must be your thyroid or it must be your hormones. And again, sometimes it could be, but you're talking about a small percent of the population.
Right.
Generally speaking, if someone is coming to me and claiming that they have a hormone issue, my first question back to that is going to be, what's the evidence? And if the evidence is I can't lose weight, that's not enough evidence for me. Yeah. Have you tracked macros before? Have you gotten lab work done? Have you gotten blood work done? Are you getting a regular menstrual cycle? When was your last physical or your last blood panel? Have you ever tracked macros before? Are you exercising daily? There's so many other follow-up questions to like, I'm not losing weight. And so I had actually just made a post this morning about fat loss and like what, or sorry, fat gain and what actually happens when we gain weight. And, you know, just kind of talking about energy balance. And we hear everyone say like caloric deficit. Right. If you want to lose weight, caloric deficit. But I think still a lot of people don't know what that means.
Yeah.
And so no matter what, right, no one can defy the laws of thermodynamics. If you are taking in more energy than you're using, we gain weight. If you are taking in less energy than you're using, we lose weight. If you're taking in the same energy as you're using, we maintain our weight. And even if, and this is, I think, where people go wrong a little bit, even if you have a hormone issue, a thyroid issue, you know, any of that, that law of thermodynamics does not change. The only difference is that something is downregulated. So when we hear things, I know you asked about metabolic adaptation. What that metabolic adaptation is actually our thyroid downregulating. And that's a means of survival for the body typically. When we are under a lot of stress, the body just wants to protect us. It wants us to survive. If we're starving, our metabolism downregulates. We have to remember a diet is controlled starvation, right? The body is going to feel unsafe when we're dieting because we're starving the body. And so that metabolic adaptation that we have is a downregulation in our thyroid is typically what we're referring to most. You know, yes, it can be our sex hormones and things like that, but mostly the thyroid. And so when people, you know, say that they have this slow metabolism, well, do you have a thyroid issue that was diagnosed? Well, technically then sure, you might have a slow metabolism if you have a thyroid issue that's been diagnosed. Otherwise, I think we get trapped in like putting ourselves these boxes of like, I can't make progress because
right.
I have a slow metabolism or I have a hormone issue when people haven't even like gone to the doctor and gotten those things.
I mean, diagnosed. Fair point. I marched myself to my doctor because I was convinced that was my problem, right?
Yeah.
It was so funny. One day in the bathroom, it just like, I looked at my belly and I'm like, what the hell has happened to me? Then I'm like, oh, wait a minute. It's my metabolism. Look how old I am. Da, 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 da. You know, I started putting all the pieces to the puzzle went together until I went to the doctor, got the blood panels, and she said, you're fine. There's nothing wrong. And I'm like, oh, shit. You know, and what should have been a great moment knowing, okay, the great news here is I'm in control. You know, that's actually the great news, right? I looked at it as, oh shit, I have nothing else I can really blame for this anymore. You know, it was so easy, right? To blame something else, then bring it on here. And part of it, you said earlier, people in my age bracket, the way we were brought up, what we were led to believe through every single fad known to mankind since 1978 or whatever, you know, we've seen it all. It's no wonder we don't know what the hell we're thinking anymore, you know, because it's all like gone crazy. But I truly think I thought I was doing everything right, legit, you know?
Yeah.
And legit, I wasn't, you know? And it took the doctor to do the test to tell me, no, results. You are physically fine.
Yeah. And I can only hope that people take that same initiative if they think that something is actually wrong, that they do go to a doctor and they do go get it checked out. And, you know, if they don't like that response, fine, go get a second opinion, go get a third opinion. I did that with my PCOS. I didn't like how things were handled. I went to 3 more doctors. They all gave me the same diagnosis. So then I was like, okay, I will accept this diagnosis. And so, you know, it still didn't allow, I still didn't allow myself to put myself in this box and say, well, I guess this is what it is now. I'm just going to keep gaining weight forever. And it's just, this is my reality. Mm-hmm. What a fixed mindset that would have been to put myself in this box and say, oh, I have PCOS, can't do anything about it. When really what I later came to find out in my research and with working with other practitioners and talking with other hormone experts in the wellness space was that PCOS is a stress-driven illness. the symptoms of PCOS, high testosterone, high blood sugar, insulin resistance, low estrogen. Those are all, every single one of them is a symptom of stress. Well, as you heard in my kind of journey of Joelle-ness, of being, you know, a double major, doing my master's, being in this intense program, being a teacher, running my business on the side, I was quite literally the epitome of stress.
It makes sense.
And yeah. And also getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go train before my teaching day. So stress was my middle name. So when it was kind of brought to my attention, like, these are things that could be managed with stress, I was like, what? You're telling me that I can fix this? I can change this? And so I did. And so I changed the way I was training, and I changed the volume and intensity of my training, and I changed around my diet a little bit, and I addressed some digestive and some gut-based issues. And I addressed all, you know, my blood sugar and all of these different aspects. And sure enough, my periods came back. I'm getting a normal, healthy menstrual cycle 7 months in a row now.
There you go.
And I am actually going to do new lab work this month to compare, you know, what it was prior. And you know, that's where I was, I guess, disappointed with how things were handled on the doctor's end of things. It was just like, no one told me that those were things I had to find out on my own. And so, you know, yes, go see a doctor, but also always try to do your own research, like advocate for your own health. I remember when I said to that doctor, like, I really don't want to be on metformin. I was 26 at the time. And I said, I'm 26. I'm a healthy and fit individual. Like, why would the answer be put me on diabetes medication? Like, I want someone to help me find out why I have this issue. Mm-hmm. And when I said to her, you know, I'm really not interested in taking this medication. That's not a knock on anyone that does. There are plenty of people that take metformin and they feel so much better. Power to you. I just was really way more interested in finding the root cause of my issues and why I wasn't cycling and why my testosterone was high and all of this. And so I will never forget when I said to this doctor, you know, what else can I be doing? If not medication, what else can I be doing to help manage my symptoms? And I will never forget. She said, well, you said you know health and fitness. I guess you know what you're doing.
Oh, great.
I just about died.
I bet.
I bawled. I left in tears and I bawled my eyes out for probably a good 48 hours. Cause this was before any of my research. So at this point I was like, I'm hopeless. No one can help me. I don't want to take medication. There's no other solution for me. Maybe I am just going to keep gaining weight forever and feeling awful forever and fatigued forever. And it was such an awful feeling. So that's why I say, like, yes, go to a doctor, but also, guys, like, advocate for yourself and your own health and, like, do your own research and find specialists in this field. You know, this was someone that I thought was a specialist in this field, but really didn't give me any helpful information other than the diagnosis itself.
I think so many people, get the same kind of humor. This is not the first time I've heard that, you know, at all. And I think that's where people get lost, and then they get lost in the, this is how it has to be.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be that way. No. I think both of us have seen time and time again, people with PCOS or anything else have been able to take control. But it is about being educated and understanding what is actually happening, and then what steps need to be taken to start making progress, you know, and getting rid of those beliefs in our head that we've had in there for, you know, 30 years that, you know, we think one way, and, you know, the whole clean thing, I hate that word. It like makes my skin crawl anymore.
Just cringe. Because,
when I used it, you know, because
same years eating, ago,
you know, it was a badge of honor, for God's sake. Yeah. You know, if you,
it was clean. The no days off, the grind never stopped,
man.
You know,
yeah.
You know, eat clean, train dirty, you know, all of these
stupid
mantras.
That. 2 days training. Yeah. I mean, all that crap.
Yeah. And you live and you learn.
Yeah, you do.
I think, as you know, the place that you and I are in, Susan, is we're in a unique spot because we've gotten to where we are now as kind of educators in this industry because we too failed in the beginning, or yeah. we maybe not failed, but we did things wrong previously. Correct. And now we learned better. And now we want to teach people how to do better so that they don't make those same mistakes we did. And that's why I'm, you know, so, and you too, passionate about putting out content and putting out quality information is like, there's plenty of misinformation out there. Let's be the people that steer them away from that. Let's be the people that are giving quality education about, look, I'm going to talk about this because this is something I experienced and I don't want you to experience it. And so what's been cool about content, and I'm sure that you've been able to notice this as well, kind of whatever you go through is whatever you end up sharing the most about. Mm-hmm. So maybe like going through menopause, that's something that you talk about on your platform more because you're more educated on that. I didn't know anything about hormones and PCOS and thyroid health until I had an issue with it. And then yep. I was forced to learn. And now I help, you know, teach other people about it because I wish that there was an Instagram account I could have turned to, you know, for that information. So I think I, you know, very much, and I'm sure you as well, try to just show up and be the educator that kind of you wish you had at that previous chapter of your journey.
That's 100% exactly what drives me. Yeah.
Yep.
Been there, done all the mistakes, you name it. I have done it in some decade or another. I did it. And it's just, and my message in particular is that, you know, I didn't get my shit together until I was probably 54 years old, 55 years old. And people think it's too late to get your shit together then. Well, you know, it's not. It's not too late to do anything in your 50s. I truly, since I just left that decade, I really feel like that is the decade. So you have a lot to look forward to because that decade is better than any other. Because you start, I mean, I figured it out for me and that's what changed, you know?
That's awesome.
And yeah, I wish I'd done it 20 years ago, but live and learn, right? And so now I want to pay it forward, as do you, and get people in your age bracket to get on it now so that when they get to my neck of the woods, they're on cruise control. You know, they've got strength. They've built muscle that Mother Nature is trying to take away, you know, just on an average day.
Right.
You know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Do you follow the account, Train with Joan?
Yes.
Do you know who that is? Oh, she's so awesome. She's, I can't remember how old she is. I think she's in her 70s.
Yeah.
She's in her 70s. And she just like, it was like a better late than never situation. She was kind of out of shape for a really long time. And at 70 years old, decided she wanted to get in shape. And she's like lifting weights on the gym. She's got sponsorships.
Yeah. She's kicking ass.
She's kicking ass. Yeah. That's just who popped into my mind for a brief second, you know, about just it never being too late. You know, you can start this journey at any point. You know, and you have the power to do that. You have the choice. It's your choice every single day, what, you know, you choose to not do or do how to take care of yourself.
Absolutely. You know, another thing that comes up to me frequently is, the thought, and we mentioned it briefly, metabolic adaptation from the perspective of, I'm eating too little. I went through believing that was one of the things that
starvation mode.
I'm not sure what decade that was in, but I vividly remember buying into that too. Right. And people don't understand what is actually happening, but just as a general statement, I see a lot of people saying they're eating 1,000 calories, let's say, and let's put a time frame on that, like Monday through Thursday. You know, you can do anything kind of extreme for a short period of time. I mean, most anybody can suffer for a while, but at some point you're like, I can't do this shit anymore. You know, I mean, and so then the reins get looser. And then they get looser and pretty soon it's just at the weekend and blah, blah, blah. We didn't eat that much more, you know, so you don't really think about it because we suck at estimating. Right. So, and so then they're back to Monday and they reach out and they say, I am eating 1,000 calories and I'm not losing weight. And I'm like,
but are you?
But are you? Right. Do you hear a lot of that?
Yeah. I think there's kind of two factors to that. One, I call that the weekday diet, where like Monday through Friday, you're on it. You're like eating your vegetables. You're spreading out your lean proteins throughout the day.
Cranking.
And the weekend comes and it's an all, you know, all you can eat buffet. It's a binge fest. And then Monday comes and it's, you know, diet starts Monday all over again. And you do this over and over and over and over. But when we actually kind of average out those calories, if it's 1,000 Monday through Friday, but then Saturday, Sunday, you're at 3,500. Well, you're not going to be in an actual deficit, you know, at the end of the week. So, you know, that's one side of things is, like you said, the estimating side.
Well, you know, and along with that, they think they're doing 1,000 because they only remember the miserable part, right?
Yeah.
And that's the psychological component to this. And there are a lot of similar kind of psychological comparisons that can be made, but you only remember the hardest thing, the part that when you were the most miserable, you know, that's what's in here. So legit, they think they're eating 1,000 calories, right?
And also they're, you know, they're counting 1,000 calories from the broccoli and chicken meal that they had and the egg whites and, you know, banana that they had for breakfast, but you forgot about the Frappuccino in between and, you
coffee.
Know, you forgot
coffee.
About the, right. The coffee quote unquote, that you had, and the, you know, the healthy cookie, Lenny and Larry's 350 calorie damn cookie or whatever it is that you had at lunch. Cause it was a protein cookie. So, you know, that was healthy for you to have. Like, so often I think people track, but they don't, they're not tracking everything. Yeah. They're not tracking accurately. Or they're forgetting, you know, to track those little tastes, bites, nibbles of things here and there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of one part of the low calorie situation. What actually tends to happen, and this is what I kind of explain to people when we get on a consult call, you know, sometimes people come to us and some people absolutely are under eating. There are some people that absolutely they're eating 1200 calories a day. They're busting their ass 6 days a week in the gym and they're not seeing progress because they're not eating enough.
Mm-hmm.
Now that not eating enough doesn't mean that they're eating so little they can't lose weight. Cause again, that goes against thermodynamics, right?
Right.
What actually happens is our metabolisms adapt to whatever we're feeding it. So if I need 2,500 calories a day to maintain my current weight, and I drop down to 1,200 calories in my diet, I'm going to lose weight at first. I'm going to lose a lot of weight at first. That's a 1,300 calorie deficit. That's pretty severe. We typically don't do more than like a 500 calorie deficit with a client. So let's say I drop down to 1,200. I'm going to lose a bunch of weight at first, but eventually what do we hear from people? I plateaued. I hit a plateau. My diet stopped working. Now let me go try keto or let me go add two more hours of cardio in, right? We start to look for something else because we're like, oh, I plateaued. My body's broken. My, you know, my diet's not working anymore. Got to change it up. When in reality, nothing's broken. We didn't necessarily plateau. What this plateau actually is metabolic adaptation. And so what that simply means is in a easily digestible way, the body eventually says, hey, if you're only feeding me 1200 calories, I got to learn how to live off of 1200 calories. I can't keep losing weight at this rate. There will be nothing left of us. If we keep losing 2 pounds every week for the rest of time, we'll die. Like we will starve. So your metabolism downregulates your thyroid, your hormones, your sex hormones, everything downregulates to meet your body where it's at. So people tend to say like, my body's fighting me. And I'm like, no, your body is protecting you. Your body's goal. The only thing your body cares about is survival. It doesn't care if you have a six pack. It wants you to survive. And so now when 2,500 calories used to be what you could eat to maintain your weight, well, now you've taught your body, we're going to learn how to maintain on 1200. And so now we're maintaining at 1200, which means you're no longer in a deficit after a while, which means if you did want to keep losing more fat, you'd have to drop even lower than that. I would not advise anyone to drop lower than that. I wouldn't even advise someone to drop to 1200 calories.
Yeah, exactly.
So then you have people that are like, oh, you know, I guess I got to eat less. Well, what are you going to eat? 800 calories? Like my morning smoothie is 800 calories and you're burning more with your 10,000 steps and your workout than 800 calories. So now what? You're netting zero negative calories. How does that sound healthy? Right. We can't get enough nutrients when calories are that low. We can't get enough fiber. We can't get enough iron, micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, everything. So what I call this in terms of coaching is kind of what I like to call the point of no return, which sounds kind of dark and gloomy. But there is hope, just like how, when we diet down and things downregulate, When we add food back in, we can cause an upregulation. And so that is where we hear about reverse dieting. Mm-hmm. And this is something that we do with probably 95% of our clients, maybe even more, because so many women come to us over-exercising, under-eating, under-recovering, missing menstrual cycles, everything else from poor recovery and nutrient deficiencies, calorie yeah. deficiencies for years. And so that metabolic adaptation that takes place, it's just your body saying, hey, we got to meet you where you're at. We can't keep going on like this. We can't keep losing weight at this rate. And so that's what that plateau is. Like, for anyone listening that has been like, oh, I hit a wall, I've hit this plateau, it's just your body catching up.
Right. And part of the process, it happens.
Exactly. Exactly. And so when we get to that low point where there's nothing left to cut from, there's no more cardio to add, there's nothing left to cut from, we're already freaking miserable, not sleeping well, digestion's a mess, you know, we're constantly fatigued, not recovering from our workouts, constantly sore, soreness is lingering, all of that, we have to bring calories back up. And I think what I hear from a lot of people is, I feel like for how hard I'm working, I don't look like how I think I should look. And my follow-up question to that is always, well, how much are you eating and how much are you training? And it's usually a combination of super low calories and not enough recovery time. And so what I try to explain to people is that the physique that we want, right, that the toned look that people desire, right, that is a result of building muscle. Well, guess what, friends? If we are chronically in a deficit, we're not taking in enough calories to build muscle.
I was going to say,
Yeah. And if we're not resting from the gym, we're not getting enough recovery time to repair and rebuild that tissue. Yeah. So the first thing we do, you know, when someone is on those chronically low calories and they're not building muscle and everything else, we start titrating down training. You know, they're still training, they're strength training, but we titrate down cardio and we start to bring up calories. And suddenly people are starting to gain muscle and they're starting to sleep better and their body composition is starting to change because they're finally giving their body enough nutrients to actually function optimally.
100%. I see this all the time and I find it fascinating when I talk to people and they talk about, I'm struggling, nothing's moving, whatever, blah, blah, blah. The first thing they talk about is, so I work out 5 days a week. I'm going to add another HIIT class. And then I'm also going to pick up boxing 2 times a week. And then I run every third Wednesday. You know, I mean, it's like they talk about this over-exercising.
More
is better. Not better is better. Without, they haven't even mentioned one thing about their nutrition. And oftentimes they can't say a lot about their nutrition because it's not really a plateau from I've stayed at this calorie deficit for a certain amount of time. It's not about that. For some people, it's I haven't really been very accurate, you know, and all I'm focusing on is what is not driving the car. I need to focus on the driver of the car, which is my nutrition right now, right? But it's really interesting how we all focus on training because that is what we can change the easiest, right? Can be the most fun. It's easy to add something or take something out. You know, training is it, and more is better. That's what I grew up to believe, you know, it's so not true. And there's still not a day that goes by when I get asked how many days a week I train and I say 4, I get the follow-up question, what do you do on the other 3 days? And I'm like, nothing.
Recover, walk.
I walk every day. I've learned to like walking. I won't say love it yet, but I've learned to like it because I'm coming from I have to walk. Like a walk can't be an enjoyable thing.
Right.
It has to be a work thing.
Right.
I've now learned it can be enjoyable. I can decompress. I can whatever, because my next workout is so much more effective.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
People don't get that.
And you know, it's the kind of way I like to put it into perspective for people is, would you rather train 4 days a week at 100% strength and capacity, or would you rather train 7 days a week and never feel your strongest, never recover your best, and train at 50% capacity, 60% capacity?
Yeah.
I'll take the 4 days of 100% any day of the week. And I can say that because I came from a background of 7 days a week training twice a day and seeing no progress. And so you start to realize something's got to give. Right? So then we hear people say, I'm doing all the right things, but I'm not seeing progress. Well, if you're not seeing progress, you're not doing all the right things.
Yeah.
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 So it's funny, we have kind of a motto with our clients and sort of a running joke with our clients and our coaches. We say at level 10, do less, because we see so many people trying to do more. And then when we start to add in food and control training a little bit better and add in more rest and whatnot, you know, then people are like, wait, I'm doing less and I'm seeing more progress, or, you know, I'm doing less cardio than I was doing and I'm seeing more progress. And we're like, yeah. There is some beauty in doing less.
Yeah.
You know, that's obviously not applicable to everyone. You know, right. We can't obviously speak to every single person that's listening here. There are people that are not doing enough, right? And
correct.
Are not active enough or are eating too much. But, you know, there's also a population of people that are doing too much.
Would totally agree. Totally agree. Well, this has been amazing. It's been amazing to chat with you.
You
too. I feel like I could talk to you all day.
I know. I feel like we could go for like hours and hours.
We could go for hours. Tell everybody where they can find you. I know you said it at the beginning, but I'll put it in the show notes too.
Sure.
But just, yeah.
Sure. So Instagram is where I'm mostly at. So just Joelle Samantha on Instagram. And then our coaching Instagram is Level 10 Coaching, TEN, not the number. And so that's, you know, pretty much where you'll, you know, be able to find the bulk of our content on our website, which is, you know, level10coaching.co. We have some free resources up there. We have, you know, a footwear guide. We have a grocery list. We have a gut and digestive health guide. So there are some resources up there for you. And you can also join our email list. We send out, you know, informational content every single week written by our coaches. So yeah, just want to give you guys as much value as we can so that you can learn and have a more enjoyable and educated part of your journey.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Well, thank you so much for being here. This was amazing.
Thank you so much for having me.
When I hop up north, I will definitely let you know.
Yes. Next time you're in New York, find me.
Absolutely. I'll find you. Thank you so much, Joelle. We'll talk soon.
All right.
Take care.